Forming the Lines, written and read by Alcove Words. Summary. Merlin takes ill and is conflicted over Arthur. Arthur is conflicted over Merlin and hates considerate replacement servants. And the knights are helpful, thoughtful fellows. Everyone knew that princes were essentially for training. Certainly, a prince had a lot of other responsibilities as well, especially Arthur, but they all served the sole purpose of readying him for an eventual kingship. So, Arthur trained every day with every weapon he had available, and they were all available, in order to be an exceptional knight. He attended council, even though it was hideously boring, so that he could learn to make the sort of decisions that kings made. At night, he made time to read and study all manner of things, from royal-bound books with glossy seals to the dustiest, most dilapidated scrolls, because he knew the world was much bigger than Camelot. Arthur, ultimately, was raised from birth to become Camelot's greatest asset. By and large, he was, and he was quite proud of it. That was probably the reason why Prince Arthur of Camelot, the bravest, most attentive, and well-read heir apparent ever to burst onto the scene of Albion, was sulking unpleasantly at his breakfast table. Proud, prosperous young princes did not miss clumsy servants. Arthur did not miss Merlin. But actually, he did. He'd started missing him the second his door cracked open carefully, and a young serving boy had gingerly bade him to rise instead of shouting his name too cheerfully and flinging open the curtains. "Where is Merlin?" Arthur had asked, in no way pouting, and from deep inside his pillow. The serving boy had been irritatingly polite and accommodating as he'd set out Arthur's breakfast and explained that Merlin sent him a note. The boy had propped the note elegantly up against Arthur's goblet, and then had added that Gaius also sent a note, which he'd propped up against Arthur's plate. "They asked that you read Gaius's note first, sire," the serving boy had said, bowing. Now Arthur found himself frowning, generally annoyed, and bit rather savagely into an apple. Behind him the diligent serving boy was already laying out his clothing. Gaius's note was folded with straight, efficient lines, and bore Arthur's name in surprisingly regal scrawl. Arthur unfolded it. "Arthur, I'm sorry to inform you that Merlin has taken ill. He seems to have contracted a very aggressive, not to mention contagious, cold. It would behoove all parties if he were confined to his bed for today. I will send his replacement. Owe his blatant disrespect to his fever. Respectfully, Gaius." Arthur's frown practically touched his jaw. Merlin had said rather a few more times than normal that he didn't want to go with Arthur on the deer hunt yesterday. Illustrious princes did not feel guilty about commanding servants to do their jobs. But Arthur did now, because he wondered if Merlin hadn't been feeling poorly. The serving boy asked him if he would prefer a bath before or after training as he began getting Arthur's armor out. Arthur swallowed a bite of pork. "If you drop my armor, I'll have you slammed in the stocks." The serving boy paused and paled dramatically instead of calling Arthur a prat, and Arthur sighed dejectedly. He reached for Merlin's note, which was haphazardly folded, and said, "Sire," in the most decidedly snarky handwriting Arthur had ever seen. It read, "Insufferable prat, Arthur. I'm sick, and I'm not attending you today. I'll be surprised if you manage. Germ-ridden, Merlin." Smiling before he realized he was smiling, Arthur ordered the now very anxious serving boy to put the letters on his desk, and to bring him paper and quill. "If you drop my quill, I'll have you thrown in the dungeon," Arthur said. The serving boy made a strangled noise, and Arthur tried, mostly successfully, not to laugh. Slightly later, having penned a note and sent it off, Arthur settled in for a day of no Merlin. At first, it sounded like a very boring day indeed, but since royal princes like Arthur shouldn't need servants to feel like his kingdom's greatest asset, Arthur decided he didn't honestly need Merlin. He just liked having him around, and he could probably go weeks without him. Although, he actually couldn't. But he told himself he could anyway. In any case, it was just a cold. Merlin would be fine and back tomorrow. No one could argue that knights were essentially for fighting. There was a lot of singing about knights being gallant and gracious and seeking out creatures to slay for the sake of love. But most knights knew that, at the very core, one became a knight if one was good at fighting. And that was actually one of the sole requirements, too, the being good at fighting. It was nice to have other qualities as well, but it wasn't necessary, and so, whereas Camelot's knights were some of the best fighters in Albion, they weren't all the best philosophers, or observers, or field medics, or even conversationalists. But they had very good instincts anyway, when it came to battle and taking orders, and that's probably why they didn't have to be told that Arthur's servant, Merlin, the pale, lanky, laughing-eyed young man constantly at his side, was to be protected equally, and sometimes above Arthur himself. Arthur could never officially order something like that, of course. Uther would have a fit, but when people have fought alongside one another for long enough, sometimes words become superfluous, especially over the important stuff. Arthur dropped hints instead, ones he probably didn't even mean to drop, like the day Arthur postponed a hunt until a tame enough horse could be found for Merlin, who was a relatively inexperienced rider, or the day when Sir Leon went to take his position in the patrol lines in front beside Arthur, only to find Merlin in his spot. Well, Sir Leon hadn't been angry, but he had been a little baffled to be certain, and inconvenienced, of course, because then everyone had to move back one, and Sir Gareth ended up on the end of the line without a partner. "Aren't you usually up by Arthur?" Bedivere had asked, leaning over to whisper to Sir Leon, and watching Kay begin the confusion of backing horses into a new arrangement. Sir Leon had nodded and shrugged, and Bedivere quirked an eyebrow and yawned hugely. Somewhere behind them, Tristan cursed because he'd just been shifted next to Lamorack, whose horse hated Tristan with rare equestrian tenacity, and was indiscreetly biting at his sleeve. There was the time, too, that Merlin was late coming to the practice grounds. He wasn't even meant to be there for any specific purpose. It was just something that he did more often than not. Arthur made Sir Gareth go and find him because he insisted it was odd, even though he complained about Merlin being late all the time. Sir Gareth ran into Merlin almost as soon as he began looking for him, because Merlin was in transit to the practice fields, but was running a little late. But the fact that Merlin was Arthur's important person, maybe even Arthur's most important person, became emphatically, unquestioningly clear when Arthur let himself be gouged in the shoulder by a boar's tusk to save Merlin from being trampled. The knights surged forward to help Percival, dragging a struggling Merlin away from the ensuing fray. The entire time, Merlin screamed for Arthur, or maybe even at Arthur, and his voice was like thunder and wind, and it built up like a tower rising from the forest floor. And then the boar literally exploded. All the knights, except for Percival, were left standing there, covered in bloody bits of boar with their spears poised. As they trudged back to Camelot, gore-slick with an injured prince and no boar, Merlin talked animatedly about how the combination of weather factors and food ingestion could contribute to randomly exploding wildlife. No one talked about what everyone actually thought happened. So, because of those instances, and several others aside, the Knights of Camelot came to accept that Merlin was a group staple, and that, in times of danger, he was to be kept safe. It helped that they all really liked Merlin, and would never want to see anything bad happen to him. He was nice, and generally helpful, and he made them all laugh. The fact was, though, that if they didn't keep him safe, then Arthur would put himself in danger keeping him safe, and that wouldn't do. A knight's job was to fight in order to protect his kingdom and his sovereign, or his would-someday-be-sovereign, in this case. The knights of Camelot were the very best at doing their jobs, so good, in fact, that when the occasion called for it, they could even protect their prince from himself. Arthur was a good man, of course, and didn't need the sort of protecting from himself that Uther did. He was, however, still young, and privileged, and stubborn, although you'd never tell on the battlefield. He aged in steel and blood. But outside of the clanging of swords, those traits tended to crop up in ways that sabotaged Arthur more often than not. So, the day that Arthur arrived for patrol without Merlin on his side, all the knights became immediately wary. "I've got Merlin's horse ready," Sir Leon said. "And yours, of course." Arthur waved Merlin's very tame and pleasant horse away. "Well, put it back. Merlin won't be joining us today," Arthur said.
"Why?"
Bedivere asked, popping up behind Sir Leon. "What's wrong with Merlin that he can't come?" Just as Arthur had his mouth open to respond, Sir Gareth trotted up to them, already saddled, and leaning down his leg a bit to get his head in the conversation circle.
"Something's wrong with Merlin?" he asked anxiously.
"Yes," said Sir Leon.
"No, wait, hold on now," Arthur intervened. "He's all right, he's just got a cold, so Merlin's sick?"
came Sir Tristan's voice. They all turned to him. He strode toward them with purpose, a look of concern on his face, and Sir Lamorack's horse following close behind him, chewing determinedly on the end of his cape.
"Sick enough not to come today," Sir Bedivere said.
"He must be very sick then," concluded Sir Tristan gravely. "And here I went packing apples to share with him at lunch, and what he really needs is soup," lamented Sir Gareth, sinking even lower into the circle.
"I brought a loaf of sourdough bread for him because he liked it so well last time," said Sir Leon. "Do you think he's strong enough to eat bread?"
"Oh, I don't know that he is, Sir Leon," said Sir Tristan, batting at Sir Lamorack's horse. Suddenly, Arthur's arms flailed into the circle, and he looked exasperated and a little nonplussed.
"Enough!" Arthur shouted. "What on earth are you all going on about? He hasn't got about a plague. It's a bloody cold. He said so in the note he sent me this morning. What's got into all of you? And how much extra food are you guys packing for him, anyway? He's not starving."
The knights were quiet, their eyes lowered in deference to their frustrated prince. Even Sir Lamorack's horse chewed less loudly on Sir Tristan's cape. Then Sir Bedivere cleared his throat and muttered, "It's just that he's so skinny." The other knights all nodded in agreement, and Arthur rolled his eyes.
"Look, this is... he's fine. He's just a little sick, and he'll probably be back tomorrow. Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to suggest we leave before Camelot falls to its enemies while we're busy fussing like a bunch of old women in a sewing circle," Arthur said.
The knights did as they were told, but they determined silently and unanimously that Arthur just wasn't taking this seriously enough. Everyone knew that servants were for serving. They served in whatever capacity, served their masters and mistresses best. There wasn't any veneer to dress a servant up. They mostly just served and were either good, bad, or moderate about it. Merlin was mostly bad at it, but in his defense, he wasn't raised as a servant. He was raised in Ealdor, a tiny village on the edge of two kingdoms almost completely forgotten by its sovereign. Nobody lorded over anybody in his community because everyone was too busy working hard, and it was share and share alike or risk dying of want, which nobody wanted. Where Merlin was from, people said please and thank you and were generally grateful. Camelot was nothing like Ealdor. Lying miserably in his narrow bed, Merlin thought about how Arthur was nothing like Ealdor either. Except he was a little, because while there wasn't any veneer to cover a servant, a prince had all kinds of veneer. It took some peeling back to get to the sturdy stuff beneath the form. Once you got to it, though, you found Arthur, who was actually very hard-working, and grateful, and good. It was hard to remember sometimes, though, when he was hurling cutlery at you and bossing you around. Merlin sneezed and was certain his head was on the verge of imploding. He groaned. The cold wasn't Arthur's fault, but surely Arthur had exacerbated it by dragging Merlin along on a rainy, cold, gray day to chase after deer. Merlin was contemplating whether or not it would be considered a misuse of his magic if he were to dish out a bit of divine justice by turning Arthur into a lame stag with a wheeze, when Gaius came into his room with one of his questionable-looking tonics.
"Don't be gentle, Gaius," Merlin said. "I'm going to die, aren't I?"
Gaius gave him a long-suffering sigh and sat on the edge of his bed. He put his hands on Merlin's brow and frowned critically, and then he pushed the tonic into his hands. "Drink up. It should help with congestion. I'll bring you in a cold cloth for your head. We've got to try and keep that fever down," Gaius said. Merlin didn't mean to scrunch his face up like a little boy just force-fed his vegetables, but he did anyway, because the tonic was disgusting. He took it, though, because he was also an adult, more or less, and knew it would help him. When Gaius came back and laid cold, wet linen across his forehead, Merlin winced. It burned a little against his too hot skin.
"This came for you also," Gaius said, handing him a note in Arthur's flawless, painfully crafted over years of diligent lessons handwriting. Gaius left, leaving the door slightly ajar in case Merlin needed something, and Merlin opened the note.
"Merlin, I did not think it was possible for you to be any more of a girl, but now that I've seen it is, I'll have Gwen send you down one of her dresses. It should be there this afternoon. Looking forward to a day without mishap. Arthur."
Merlin was torn between laughing and scowling, and since he was a man of compromise, he did both. Scowling was the better bet, though, because the laughing brought an unfortunate wave of coughing that made his chest ache. He tried to relax into his pillow, though nothing in him would relax completely, and sighed. Sometimes he thought having magic was a bit rubbish. It came in handy most of the time, he supposed, but it also got him into trouble and was utterly useless on colds. If he was such a powerful sorcerer, then why couldn't he just fix himself up? He tried, had really given it his all, but to no avail. Possibly he just wasn't good at healing magic, and he thought that was something he really needed to get better at since Arthur had dedicated his life to running at armed men and wild animals. The twinge of worry that cropped up at the thought of Arthur being reckless without Merlin there to watch his back, even for one day, even for today, made Merlin feel uneasy. Arthur might be strong and talented and brave, but he was also arrogant, proud, and endearingly gullible. He needed Merlin to make up for that. Besides, Merlin didn't remember the last time he'd spent an entire day without Arthur. Sickness aside, it sounded terribly dull. And maybe a little lonely.
The following day, Merlin didn't show up again, and Arthur felt very cross. If he had to go one more morning with this ridiculously competent and well-mannered serving boy, he'd put something through his eye. "Sire, a message from Gaius again this morning, and another from Merlin," said the serving boy, helpfully refilling Arthur's goblet. Arthur scowled at the notes and took a vicious bite of cheese. "What's your name, boy?" Arthur asked, watching his temporary help bustle about the room.
"It's Emmett, sire."
"What would you do if I called you an idiot, Emmett? In fact, what would you do if I decided idiot was your first name, and Emmett was your middle name, and your last name was, I don't know, also Emmett?" Arthur asked, leaning forward desperately. Emmett, who blinked at him owlishly and probably wondered if his prince had gone a trifle soft in the head, bowed respectfully and replied, "If you renamed me Idiot Emmett, sire, then I would introduce myself from then on as Idiot Emmett Emmett." Arthur could have sobbed. Instead, he grabbed Gaius's note and opened it with unnecessary force. "Arthur, I must inform you that Merlin is still ill and still contagious. His ailment has worsened, and he must again be confined to his bed. Not to worry. With rest, time, and treatment, he will be well again soon. Please attribute the rudeness to a delirium. Respectfully, Gaius." Arthur's first reaction was to worry and cancel his entire day so that he could go to Gaius's and sit beside Merlin's bed, and just look at him, and watch his chest rise and fall with breathing, and know he was alive. His next reaction was to chide himself. First and foremost, Merlin was perfectly alive. Gaius said he would be fine, and Gaius would know. Second, princes of esteem did not put all of their duties on hold for servants, not even for the servants they counted among their dearest friends, and trusted implicitly, and harbored unreasonable cheekbone admiration. Frowning, Arthur opened Merlin's note. "Dollop head, insufferable prat, Arthur. In case you haven't noticed, I'm not in your chambers for you to verbally abuse today. I'm still sick, possibly dying. In case I do expire, I've had Gawain run up my tab at the tavern to colossal proportions, and I will it to you. Wasting away, Merlin." Arthur smirked. Merlin was well enough to still be cheeky Merlin. He ordered Emmett to bring him paper and quill again. As he crafted his note, he tried very hard not to think about missing Merlin, or about Merlin pale and fading. Emmett took the message and left his chambers. Arthur was chewing a slice of ham when the boy's head popped around the door, and he asked, "Sire, just to be clear, should I introduce myself to people as Idiot Emmett Emmett?" Just for that, Arthur really thought he should. It was Sir Leon who, after patrol that morning with a very cross Arthur and no Merlin to cheer him up, decided that it would be better for everyone if Arthur were to stop being a prince
long enough to be a friend. What, you think a day off spent at Merlin's bedside would do him well? Sir Kay asked. He handed Sir Leon a mug of ale and sat down at the table across from him. The knights more or less commandeered the tavern on Wednesday evenings, not only because of the sheer number of them and the relative smallness of the place, but also because not many people wanted to be drunk and disorderly in the same space as Camelot's finest. "I do, actually," said Leon. "Well, you've got to admit, he wasn't quite at top-notch today." "I'll say he nearly took Bedivere's head off when we stopped to check out that campsite," said Gareth. Bedivere nodded. "Right, nearly put an arrow between my eyes. I've never seen him aim a crossbow so poorly." The knights took a moment to drink to the safety of Bedivere's head, and Sir Tristan commented that, aside from remarkably, totally uncharacteristically bad aim, Arthur had also been very quiet when he wasn't barking orders. Sir Leon explained all of this behavior away with two words, "No, Merlin," and none of the knights disagreed with him. "So why doesn't he just go visit him?" Kay asked. "Oh, he could pop around easy enough." "Because," Sir Leon said, as though Kay was a small, easily confused boy, "he's stubborn and proud and, most importantly, he doesn't want to just pop around." "Right. I mean, when your Rosie is sick, do you want to just pop around to see her, or do you want to stay around and help her out and make her better?" Gareth asked reasonably. Kay acquiesced, bobbing his head, and then he paused and stared carefully around the table. "Wait a minute, then," he said. "Wait, are you saying that Merlin is like my Rosie? That, Merlin is Arthur's Rosie?" "Merlin is Arthur's Merlin," Bedivere corrected. "Oh, he'd make an awful Rosie." They all drank to Merlin being a Merlin and not a Rosie, and that's how Sir Leah knew they were getting drunk. "Oh, well then," said Kay. "Poor man. Well, the king would never let him shirk his duties to take care of a servant like I'd take care of my Rosie." "Exactly. And poor Merlin, too," uttered Tristan into his mug. The mood became rather dour around the table, the knights wallowing in their own imaginings of Arthur and Merlin's self-pity. When the air was so saturated with sadness it was leaking into their ale, Sir Leon slammed his fist on the tabletop, eyes flashing. "What are knights for?" he demanded, looking around at his brothers in arms. "Fighting!" cried Sir Gareth. "Right, fighting to protect!" added Bedivere. "And what are we, then?" Sir Leon asked. Sir Kay and Sir Tristan answered, "Knights!" in perfect unison. Once they had all of that established, Sir Leon leaned conspiratorily inward, and told them how they would fight Arthur's own stubbornness and nearly dizzying sense of duty to protect him, his relationship with Merlin, Bedivere's head, and other various important knightly parts. Day 2 of Merlin's convalescing was more miserable than the first. At least yesterday he could pretend whatever little bug had gotten hold of him would be a 24-hour thing, and he had pretended that, even though Gaius had told him it was unrealistic at the rate he was going. It had been nice believing it, but now he had no hope. Gaius told him he was in for the duration this morning when he brought him some porridge, which Merlin could hardly enjoy since swallowing hurt like he imagined getting pricked in the throat with hundreds of needles hurt. His fever flared up in intervals, which left him exhausted, and his muscles ached, so there was no way to get comfortable in bed. He tried to do a little playful magic a couple times because it used to make him feel better when he got sick as a child, and because he was horridly bored. But his concentration was lacking, and the shirt he was commanding to fold caught on fire instead. The severity of Gaius's lecture was in no way dampened by Merlin looking ill and pathetic. In fact, Merlin thought Gaius had made the cough serum taste even more awful as punishment. The only thing that made the day even the slightest bit bearable was Arthur's note, which was rude and pompous, and made Merlin miss the prince reluctantly and terribly. "Merlin, I noticed your absence this morning when I actually got to wake up in a good mood. And don't worry, I verbally abused someone in your place. In any case, I thank you sincerely for willing me your drink tab in the event of your expiration. Should the event come to pass, I'll have it preserved in stone and left as your grave marker. Cheerfully, Arthur." P.S. Don't expire, though, Merlin. Merlin read the last line several times throughout the day, usually when he was certain his body was going to either spontaneously combust or freeze with fever. It wasn't a cure, but it made him feel a little better. The next day, Arthur was out of bed and already dressed by the time Emmett came carefully into his chambers. The young boy looked surprised, as though the idea that Arthur knew how to wake up and dress all by his lonesome hadn't occurred to him. He even stared with critical eyes like he was making certain Arthur had gotten all his buttons properly holed. Arthur, who had only gone through the trouble of it all to avoid having to put out his eye, as he had vowed he would if he had to endure one more day of bloody Emmett being bloody considerate, scowled fiercely. Under his glower, Emmett wilted.
Your breakfast, sire, Emmett said meekly, setting the dishes out on the table.
Arthur huffed in a very princely and not at all petulantly way.
What makes you think I want breakfast? He asked irritably.
It's breakfast time? Emmett answered, confused. I mean, forgive me, sire, but I generally bring you your breakfast right around now, so I'd supposed you might want it again at the same time?
Arthur did actually want breakfast, and right now. He didn't want it from Emmett. He wanted breakfast right now for Merlin. Hang breakfast at all, in fact, because he honestly just wanted Merlin. Arthur wanted Merlin to argue with and trade insults. He wanted to watch Merlin, that gentle half-smile on his face, clean his armor while listening to Arthur rant about everything under the sun just because Arthur couldn't rant at anyone else save for Merlin. He wanted Merlin to look up at him under his dark eyelashes and dimple at him and crinkle his eyes in mirth when he laughed. But the thing was, as the thing always was, that while Arthur could be just Arthur with Merlin, he was Prince Arthur to everyone else. And Prince Arthur couldn't want anything the way Arthur wanted Merlin. Prince Arthur couldn't be worried over a stupid cold and certainly couldn't spend his days nursing his servant back to health from said stupid cold. And Prince Arthur called the shots, unfortunately. Sickeningly.
A note? Arthur asked softly, quietly hopeful.
Only from Gaius, sire. If you need me, sire, I'll be right outside, Emmett said softly, and left because he wasn't pushy like Merlin, and apparently knew when princes like Arthur needed their space.
Don't say anything, Arthur commanded, face steely as he came to his assembled knights, and put Merlin's horse away. He's still out with cold. A squire came to lead Merlin's gentle horse back to the stables, and the knights said nothing at all. They didn't need to anyway, because the plan was simple. It had had to be. Anything more complex would have required a level of sobriety that none of them possessed on Tavern Wednesday. Besides, brothers-in-arms didn't need words sometimes. Well, they communicated with furtive glances and strategic motions and instincts about the ways in which their individual minds worked. For example, Sir Leon cleared his throat casually as he mounted his horse and glanced back at Kay, who knew he was commenting that the crease in Arthur's brow and the press of darkness under his eyes lent the prince a look of general deep-seated awfulness. Kay inclined his head slightly in agreement and added, via a particularly rapid blink, that he hoped everything panned out. Bedivere trotted into place beside Kay and pursed his lips, explaining that he and Tristan had just had an extended conversation about the nobleness of Arthur and Merlin's affections, and Tristan flailed unceremoniously as Sir Lamorack's horse attempted to nose him out of his saddle, which either meant he was prepared to do everything in his power to preserve their relationship, or, help me, it's trying to end me violently.
It's just a cold, Arthur said, about 20 minutes into patrol.
Leon looked over at him, face carefully blank.
"Sorry, you say you have a cold?" he asked.
"No, not me. Merlin, of course," Arthur said indignantly. "Have you forgotten him? He's the one who's sick.
With cold? With just a cold and nothing else serious?"
"Oh, right. Well, of course not, sire. I'm sure it's nothing more serious," said Leon pleasantly. "I'm sure Merlin will be back with us any day now."
Arthur nodded stiffly, looking satisfied, and sat a little straighter in his saddle. There was a perfectly timed beat in the air then. And from behind them, Bedivere, nonchalant and musing, said,
"Of course, colds can be very deceptive."
"Oh, that's true, isn't it?" Sir Leon said, nodding sagely.
Arthur's eyes shifted from their riding path to Sir Leon.
"It is," said Kay, who was riding behind Arthur.
"Didn't your mum die from cold last year, Kay?" Sir Leon asked.
"She did," said Kay. "Quite sudden, very sad."
Sir Bedivere tisked and sighed. "Very, very deceptive." Out of the corner of his eye, Sir Leon watched Arthur's hands tighten on his horse's reins, and his horse huffed irritably at him. He brushed her mane, apologetically. Leon discreetly patted his own horse's rump, and Kay and Bedivere silently passed along the initial success of their plan. At lunchtime, Arthur ate with the knights out on the practice fields. He liked to do that sometimes. Spread out on the grass, he felt less like a prince and more like one of the guys. Today was a little different, though, because Merlin wasn't with him. Merlin had a way of bridging the social gap between Arthur and his knights, an unheard-of ability to make everyone, even Arthur sometimes, nearly forget that he was a prince. The knights ate and spoke with more respect than normal, which was putting Arthur in a dreary mood. He ate his cheese, could almost hear Merlin's snarky comment about him being a sulky brat, and disparaged the stupid cold keeping him in bed. He was busy thinking about all the things Merlin would say if he wasn't sick with cold, and only caught the last bit of Sir Gareth's comment, something about fatalities? "What are you on about?" Arthur asked. Sir Gareth looked up from wrapping a piece of bread in a shred of linen. "Nothing, sire. Just talking about what Tristan saw this morning before patrol," he said offhandedly. Arthur pursed his lips. "And what did he see?" he asked. Sir Tristan was tossing bits of apple further and further across the grass in an attempt to deter Sir Lamorack's horse, which one of the stable boys had apparently failed to put away. Sir Lamorack's horse would only be distracted from nibbling Sir Tristan's hair if it had apples to chase instead. "Oh, nothing of interest, sire," said Tristan. "Just a few funeral processions in the lower town."
"Died of colds, apparently," Sir Leon added, taking a bite of mutton.
"Of colds?" Arthur asked, doubtfully, his lip curling involuntarily. Sir Tristan scrambled for another apple as Sir Lamorack's horse began circling back toward them. "Yes, sire," he said, chucking a slice. Sir Lamorack's horse slowly turned to follow the apple portion. "Well, it's just like my mom, sire," said Kay. "Fine one day, sick the next."
"Oh, it's just a cold," we all said. "No cause for concern," we all said. Then, of course, a few days later, she passed out in her soup dead.
"Dead?"
"Dead as a dormouse, sire, yes, indeed."
"And in her soup?"
"Yes, sire, potato, the silent abettor to the common cold."
"Very, very deceptive," muttered Bedivere.
"Anyone have any food they'd like dropped off later?" Sir Gareth chimed, holding up his wrapped parcel of bread.
As the knights began offering bits of their lunches up to Sir Gareth's cause, Arthur tried to wipe the images out of his head. The one with Merlin face down in a bowl of soup. The one where Merlin was starving and only had enough to eat because the knights kept taking up collections for him. The one of Merlin's funeral procession.
"The images wouldn't go away at all, though, and they were ridiculous. Oh, the whole thing was ridiculous. Merlin had a cold. He wasn't starving, he wasn't dying, and he wasn't gurgling in a bowl of soup right now, for God's sake."
"Merlin has Gaius!" Arthur shouted. The knights looked up at him, startled, and maybe even a little like they wondered if he had become unfortunate in the head. Sir Lamorack's horse paused in its pursuit of apples. Arthur didn't even mind. He was going to set right all of their silly, ridiculous, awful chatter. "Merlin lives with the court physician. He's an apprentice with the court physician. He's in the safest place a sick person can be, so enough about Merlin's mortal peril. He's not in any at all," Arthur exclaimed. The knights were quiet for so long that Arthur actually started to feel a little awkward, and then Sir Leon cleared his throat.
"Who said anything about Merlin?" he asked.
Arthur furrowed his brow and could not stop the blush from rising to his face, even though he commanded it to do so most severely. When it reached his cheeks, he wondered if it was politically possible to charge his body with treason.
"Although, now that you mention it, how is Merlin?" asked Sir Leon.
Arthur gritted his teeth. "He has a cold," he grumbled.
"Terrible things, colds," mumbled Sir Bedivere.
Arthur threw his hands up in the air, stood, and glared at each and every one of his very innocent, disinterested, and impartial-looking knights. He turned on his heel then, and proceeded to stomp away.
"Where are you going, sire?" called Tristan.
"To see bloody Merlin," Arthur shouted.
"Since you're going in that direction, would you mind taking all this food to him?"
Sir Gareth asked. Arthur just hollered back for someone to cover for him and to put Sir Lamorack's horse away, and Sir Gareth muttered something about dropping it off later. As the knights watched their prince retreating, Sir Tristan leaned toward Kay companionably.
"How is your mum, by the way?"
Sir Kay shrugged and replied, "Oh, very well, thanks. Strong as an ox, even at 62."
"Do you think she could fix my cape?" Tristan asked, holding up the bright red garment.
There were several holes chewed through at the end. Sir Kay examined the holes briefly. "She'd be glad to," he said. "By the by, who are the funerals for that you saw today?" Sir Tristan folded up his cape carefully and said, "Mrs. Wilson lost 2 goats in the middle of the night. Everyone's quite torn up about it." "Not Bleeding Bill and Goaty Gertie!" exclaimed Sir Gareth, scandalized. Tristan nodded solemnly, and everyone had a moment of silence, wherein they all agreed to have a toast in their honor next Tavern Wednesday. They couldn't mourn long, however, because their work wasn't quite done. The getting Arthur to relent to himself was all well and good, but now that he'd gone off leaving them with creative license insofar as the interpretation of "cover me" was concerned, they needed to get organized. Practice needed to be held, there were a few young candidates for knighthood scheduled, and council would be in session in the late afternoon. The knights divvied themselves up, splitting off to cover the practices and the knight candidates, leaving Sir Leon to act as Arthur's representative at council, since Arthur would be reportedly resolving a sudden and ill-timed dispute in the lower town around that time. Once, when Merlin was little, his best friend Will had come down with an awful sickness, where he vomited every time he tried to eat, and his fever was so high that he hallucinated terrible skeletal creatures grasping at his ankles. Despite his mother's explicit order that he was to wait until Will was no longer contagious to visit him, Merlin had snuck in 2 visits well before his friend was better. Both times Will had been mostly asleep, and Merlin had wished him well and slipped out glumly. A couple weeks later, when Will was recovered, he had told Merlin that he had heard and seen him on the visits, but he hadn't been sure if he was dreaming or not, since Merlin's voice had sounded like something under water, and looking at Merlin's face had been like trying to look at him through fog. Will had said he'd been too muzzy to tell the difference between reality and his dreams. Now, Merlin was muzzy. He'd not been quite sure what Will meant by muzzy, having never been that violently ill before, but he definitely understood it now as he hovered in a wakeful sleep. He felt somewhere far away from himself. In the distance he could see his room with its soft hues of hazelnut and chestnut and milky black tea, and he could see pale yellow sun trails rambling through his window. It looked lovely in his room, and Merlin wished he could get there, but there was nothing for it when he tried. He realized with a start that he was in the place where magic was kept, and that was just too far away, apparently. Just as he could see himself seeing his room from afar, he could hear himself hearing voices, underwater voices, just like Will had said, from far off as well. One of them had a creak beneath the tone, like an old floorboard, and the other sounded like, well, a bit like the sun at high noon, with a haughty kind of lilt. A very haughty high noon sun was what it sounded like, the sort that Merlin loved to stand under on warm spring days, and disliked later for the burn. He felt the place of magic draping heavily over him then, and he would have liked to stay to place the voices, which he was certain he would know if he wasn't muzzy. But one didn't resist the place of magic when it was telling one to go to sleep, so he didn't. If Gaius was surprised to see the magnanimous Prince Arthur of Camelot ducking quickly into his chambers and closing the door like it was the sole barrier between him and an approaching enemy army, he only showed it in the quirk of his eyebrow. Although Arthur supposed that eyebrow was always sort of quirked, so possibly he wasn't surprised at all. Which might actually be indicative of Gaius' opinion on Arthur's magnanimity, but, well, that hardly mattered. Prince Arthur was magnanimous. Arthur was just concerned. "Sire," Gaius greeted, not pausing in his grinding of some poor weed into green mush. "Something I can do for you? An injury I should take a look at?" "No, no, I'm fine, Gaius," Arthur said, coming further into the room with a sigh. Gaius's sort of already quirked eyebrow arched upward even more, which confirmed Arthur's earlier suspicions, and he motioned for Arthur to have a seat at one of the high stools set about the room. Arthur grabbed one, not bothering to wipe away the thin layer of dust on the seat, and pulled it close to Gaius's workbench. "Now then, sire," Gaius said. "Oh, hand me that blue bottle. Thank you. What seems to be the trouble?" Arthur hoped he'd grabbed the right blue bottle. "I just wanted to, see Merlin, actually," he said, a bit awkwardly. "He's sleeping at the moment, sire. You did get my note this morning, didn't you?" Gaius said, pointing to a green bottle, which Arthur handed him. Nodding, Arthur confirmed that he had received Gaius's note, And then, with some alarm, it came to him that Gaius might be thinking Arthur had come to recruit Merlin for some task, and he immediately began shaking his head. "Oh, no. I mean, yes, I did get your note, but I'm not here to get Merlin for anything. I was just hoping to perhaps see him a little, you know, see how he is, since, as your note, well, all your notes said he was sick, and today he didn't send one along with yours, so I thought it might be getting very serious, or something," Arthur articulated. Gaius stopped mixing and fixed Arthur with a look that, in Arthur's experience, only the elderly possessed. It was calculating and knowing all at once, and Arthur imagined that after one hit a certain age, someone from the delegation of that specific look came and left a diagram showing one exactly how to pull it off. And Gaius was evidently an avid study, because Arthur could barely suppress his urge to squirm under his gaze and eventually had to look at the floor. Finally, after what seemed like a long pause, Gaius said, "I don't suppose the king knows you're here." Arthur just shook his head. "And you know he's still quite contagious." Arthur nodded. Gaius went casually back to mixing. "As I've said, he is asleep. But I suppose that doesn't mean he isn't wanting for company. Besides, his fever could use tending," Gaius said. Arthur told the physician thank you with an almost secret, almost shy smile, and went quietly to Merlin's room with its partially ajar door. When he stepped inside, there was Merlin. It was that simple. Merlin was just there, in his bed, asleep, and there was an empty chair by his bedside, and a basin with cloth and water. As Arthur went silently across the room, he thought that maybe avoiding this for 3 days had made it all harder than it actually was, because it looked like everything was there for him. It looked like he was meant to have been here, in this room, in that chair, the entire time, and everything, and Merlin, was just waiting for him to show up. He sank into the chair like a sigh of surrender, of relief. And God, he thought, here was Merlin. Ridiculous, wonderful Merlin, paler than normal, except for the red dust of fever over his remarkable cheekbones, but still, Arthur admitted, lovely. Lovely in the way that clean white sheets are lovelier than intricate tapestries. Soaking and wringing out the cloth in the basin, Arthur thought about Merlin's dubious expression at being compared to sheets, and imagined he should come up with something else. And not that he ever necessarily planned on telling Merlin he was lovely. Well, probably not. He placed the cloth on Merlin's dampish forehead, and a rivulet of water followed the contours of Merlin's face to pool in the seam of his lips. Lips which Arthur in no way wanted anything to do with at all in the slightest. Rolling his eyes, Arthur dabbed the cloth on Merlin's cheeks, and supposed he might mention Merlin being lovely some day, maybe. It was not, Merlin decided, his fault if, upon waking to find Arthur manhandling one of his favorite blue shirts in a pathetic attempt to fold it, Merlin called him the worst excuse for a human being with hands ever conceived. Arthur looked over at him, surprised, and only didn't drop the shirt in question due to, Merlin imagined, years of reflex training. Merlin watched a few thoughts travel across Arthur's face in swift succession. Arthur wanted to grin, then wad the shirt up and chuck it at him, and then say something offensive. Merlin might have been ill, but even at his worst, he excelled at reading Arthur like a book. Although, he thought, smirking a little, Arthur was a touch simple sometimes, so maybe it wasn't that much of an accomplishment. Eventually, Arthur schooled his expression, like Merlin had seen him do at diplomatic meetings or when he was arguing with his father, a sign he'd settled on something. He scowled just a little and set the shirt aside. "That's a fine thing to say to someone who has been charitably giving his valuable time to your pathetic cause all afternoon," Arthur said, coming around the bed to sit in the chair Gaius usually sat in when he came to check on him. Merlin winced a little as he made to sit up, and Arthur leaned forward suddenly to place a warm hand on his back and a steadying hand around his arm. It was unexpected. Merlin didn't really know why, exactly, because Arthur had saved his life more than once, and surely that couldn't be less intimate a gesture than helping Merlin to sit up properly. Somehow it was, though. Possibly, Merlin mused, staring at Arthur sitting in the waning light of slowly approaching evening. It was more intimate because it was a small thing, and Arthur tended to be annoyingly oblivious to the little gestures most often. "Drink poison for you? No problem. Go on a quest with an almost 100% mortality rate to save your life? Of course! Say please when asking for a glass of water. How dare you even suggest it? Merlin sighed and muttered a thank you as he settled back against his pillow.
What are you doing here? He asked, voice raspy and unfamiliar to him. Arthur frowned, handing Merlin a cup of water, and said,
You really are just brimming with gratitude, aren't you, Merlin?
Merlin rolled his eyes and drank the water gratefully. I just mean you're right, Merlin said, sounding a little improved. You have a lot to do. I can't imagine how you found time to spend all afternoon here.
And Merlin really couldn't. He hadn't expected to see Arthur until he shook his cold and went back to work, and although his first feeling upon waking was indignation on behalf of a much-beloved shirt, his close second, possibly even simultaneous feeling, was confusion. Merlin attended Arthur all day, and he knew firsthand that Arthur's days were long ones. Couple that with the fact that most nobles did not tend to their sick servants, and this visit was definitely a little unprecedented. Not that Merlin was complaining. He'd missed Arthur. Not the bossing about, or the flying cutlery, or any of that business, but just Arthur. The arrogant grin, the banter, the incredible gentleness behind some of the clearest, bluest eyes Merlin had ever seen, and, though he would never, ever tell Kilgara, the thread of destiny that wound them steadily closer as days lapsed into the future. Merlin found himself smiling, and for the first time in 3 days, the warmth he felt stirring inside of him wasn't symptomatic of fever. At least not mostly. But Arthur looked away from him then, face a little stricken, and Merlin got the absurd notion to reach out and touch his downcast cheek. He did, and Arthur sort of flinched, which made Merlin drop his hand. An awkward moment ensued, which Merlin felt solely responsible and a little guilty for, where Arthur kept shifting his eyes from Merlin to the floor. Arthur, Merlin said at the exact same time that Arthur said Merlin. Merlin was pleased to see Arthur's half-smile, and he motioned for the prince to continue. I should have been here a lot sooner, Arthur said.
Shrugging, Merlin said, Oh, well, it wouldn't have made that much of a difference. I was mostly sleeping all morning. I'd have sent you a note otherwise.
Arthur gave him his exasperated, I shouldn't have to spell this out for you, look, and handed Merlin a half-empty bottle of tonic, which Merlin curled his lip at. Gaius said you should have it when you woke next, Arthur insisted, pressing it into Merlin's hands, and that's not what I meant. I meant that I should have come to see you from the start, from the first day. You'd have done for me.
Merlin had the bottle of tonic to his lips, and that's the only reason he didn't snort dismissively at Arthur's penitent expression.
Look, Arthur, Merlin said, setting the bottle on the bedside table. Of course I would look after you if you were sick, but it's sort of my job. I'm not saying that's the only reason I would do it, because it isn't. It really, really isn't. I just mean that you're a prince. You're busy all the time, and that's... Well, it's fine. I understand that.
But Arthur didn't look much consoled, and Merlin didn't know what else to say. For a moment, he just concentrated on the numbing sensation of Gaius's tonic crawling down his raw throat. He found his eyes slipping from Arthur's ridiculously earnest, abashed face to his blanket, and studying colored bands askew with loops of pulled threads.
Sorry about earlier, Merlin said, glancing sidelong at Arthur, who was distractedly dipping cloth into the water basin.
Arthur glanced back at him, questioningly, and started wringing out the cloth.
Your face. I don't know what I... Well, just sorry, Merlin said, as he watched water stream down Arthur's forearms, leaving glistening stripes as it soaked into the rolled shirt sleeves at his elbows. Possibly it was the dying light through the window and the dusky shadows creeping from the corners of his room, but before Merlin's eyes, everything about Arthur became suddenly soft and dear and gentle, as vulnerable as nudity, and painfully, frighteningly trusting. Arthur leaned forward and pressed the damp cloth to Merlin's cheek, eyes fixed to Merlin's.
Oh, that, he said, voice just above a whisper. Don't worry about that.
Merlin closed his eyes just as he felt that thread of destiny he had only recently decided to put any stock in, wind determinedly, and a sound from the place of magic, like the universe clicking, echoed in his mind. He had the notion to kiss Arthur then. And when he opened his eyes, he was. And Arthur was kissing him back. And Merlin couldn't understand what had been in the way of this before. Couldn't understand why this was the first time in the years they'd known each other that they had done this.
Out of curiosity, boys, what part of highly contagious did the two of you not understand?
Merlin sprang away from Arthur as fast as Arthur sprang away from him, and they both looked over at Gaius, standing in the doorway, with a tray of dinner, and wearing his very famous, "You're all a touch stupid, and I thoroughly disapprove," frown. Merlin, who couldn't be certain that he wouldn't die of embarrassment before he died of cold, felt only slightly relieved when he saw the familiar twinkle in his mentor's eyes that promptly forgave the trespasses which had caused the disparaging frown. Mercifully, Gaius didn't say a thing else about walking in on them. He simply set the tray down where they could both reach it, and went about checking Merlin over like the meticulous physician he was. At first, Merlin thought Arthur looked even paler than him, which was saying something, because Merlin was always paler than Arthur. But last he'd looked in the mirror, he was practically translucent from sick. He supposed he understood Arthur's worry, though. What was worse than a prince shirking his responsibilities to play nurse to his servant? A prince who shirked his responsibilities to play nurse to his servant, engaged in what the court would consider inappropriate behavior with said servant, and then got caught in the act by the king's personal adviser. But things weren't that bad at all, really. While Merlin wanted to explain to Arthur about the twinkle and the fact that it was just Gaius, and that Arthur would be fine because Gaius was in the habit of keeping all sorts of secrets. He suspected that outing Gaius as a secret keeper, however, would not be a very good thing. When he looked again at Arthur to convey some other sort of wordless encouragement, he was relieved to find that Arthur had apparently come to his own conclusions about Gaius and looked less frantic and more generally self-conscious. As Gaius turned to leave, Arthur smiled a small, somewhat devilish smile at Merlin, and Merlin had to roll his eyes to keep from looking as flustered by it as he felt. And then, pausing in the doorway, Gaius turned back to them and mused thoughtfully, "You know, I think I'd better leave this door open. Got to keep that air circulating, you know." Merlin decided Gaius was actually evil and had just been pretending all this time to be Merlin's caring father figure. When he looked over at Arthur, he suspected he was thinking the same thing. Merlin ate of dinner what he could, and Arthur ate everything else, and for a while they talked like Merlin wasn't sick and Arthur hadn't taken a risk today. Eventually, though, Merlin's fever and a long strain of uncomfortable coughing fits reminded them that he was sick, and the hour reminded them that Arthur had patrol in the morning. Arthur helped Merlin get as comfortable in bed as was possible before standing up to leave. "Arthur?" Merlin said, feeling stupidly shy. "Hmm?" Arthur asked, slipping on the coat he'd taken off at some point in the day. "Thanks for coming to see me. I missed you," Merlin said. Merlin watched Arthur look uncertain, waffling between open sincerity and good-natured sniping.
"Can I quote you on that?" Arthur asked with a cocky grin. And Merlin was fine with that.
He smirked back and said, "If you do, I'll say it was the delirium." For two more days, Arthur slipped away to Merlin, and he wondered if it was possible to have his knights reunited for making it possible. They practically chased him away the times he hesitated over going, and Arthur was always grateful that they had. Granted, after the second day of conveniently ill-timed skirmishes needing Arthur's immediate tending to in the lower town, Arthur had had to do some harrowing toe-dancing lying to his father to keep him from riding down to see the trouble for himself, but he'd managed it well enough. It was all worth it to be able to just be in the same room with Merlin, which was a thought that Arthur kept carefully guarded in his mind, even from himself, because it was painfully sappy and just a little bit scary. He preferred to think that spending time with Merlin while he was convalescing was his duty as an honorable man, since Merlin had saved his life more than once in the past. It had nothing to do with Merlin's eyes crinkling into crescents when he smiled, or Merlin's cheekbones, or the general feeling of rightness when he was near Merlin, or even the kissing. The kissing was an entirely other thing, and it was, frankly, a little confusing. The other things that Arthur definitely didn't go to see Merlin for were things he'd become accustomed to thinking. He'd labeled them safely in his mind as observations, features and feelings to which any good knight with a lick of sense about him would become attuned. Of course, he wasn't completely daft. He knew there was more to it than that, but he'd managed to trick himself just enough to get along all right and perform like the prince he was. The kissing thing, though, was not so easily categorized and stored away. Kissing Merlin made the pretenses melt away like warm rain on the last vestiges of winter snow. And in those moments, where the world dropped away and Arthur could feel them living inside one another, he knew that he loved Merlin. He loved him in all the ways it was possible to love, and in ways that no one had yet conceived of loving, and in a way that love was the layers of soil and rock in the earth making everything possible. Arthur wasn't confused about anything when they kissed, because everything made so much perfect sense. It was after the kissing, and after the heady air of desire had faded, that things became muddled again, and Arthur had to remind himself that he was Prince Arthur, and that even though he would never want anyone else like he would want Merlin, he couldn't actually have Merlin, because he was a prince and Merlin was a servant, because one day he would be king, because Camelot would need a king with a legitimate heir. They didn't talk about the kissing, really, beyond Merlin apologizing in advance if Arthur caught his cold, but Arthur still saw Merlin knowing what Arthur knew. As usual, however, Arthur also saw Merlin knowing something more than Arthur, and looking less conflicted, which irritated him, if only because of the hope it gave him. The hope he knew was false. On what would have amounted to the sixth day of Merlin waking up feeling awful, Merlin woke up to find that he didn't feel that awful at all. Well, he was fever-free, and he ate all of his breakfast, and though his body was a little weak yet, he felt well enough and restless enough to go to work. He told Gaius as much as they sat at the table, the early morning light spilling between them. Gaius warned him not to overdo it, and to keep taking his tonics regularly for a few more days just to be safe, which Merlin had already planned to do anyway. And generally, Merlin would have headed off to start Arthur's day, but that morning Gaius's expression turned suddenly grave, and Merlin fixed himself to his seat guiltily like he had under his mother's eyes the time he'd magicked old man Simmons's beard into a flock of sparrows. "Merlin," Gaius said, voice much less harsh than his face. "This thing with Arthur is what?" Merlin asked before he thought about it. "Is wrong? Dangerous? What?" Merlin could feel the indignation stirring inside of him, along with bursts of his magic, which had been lying practically dormant for days. He didn't need warnings about this thing with Arthur. He knew the warnings. He knew all of them. It was difficult enough knowing that, despite the fact that what Merlin felt for Arthur was the most right feeling in the world and true and destined down to its roots, laws of the land deemed it impossible. It was difficult enough knowing that some part of Arthur felt the same way that Merlin did, but not knowing exactly what Arthur thought about the entire thing, and not knowing how to talk to him about it. And it was just one more worry to stack onto his ever-growing pile of things to worry about while living in Camelot, including, but not limited to, burning at the bloody stake. And then three glass bottles exploded across the room, and Merlin blinked in surprise as he felt the frustrated power in him receding a little. He looked guiltily to Gaius, whose surprise was turning into a wry smile. "Sorry," Merlin muttered, feeling miserable for entirely other reasons than sickness. Gaius sighed and patted one of Merlin's hands comfortingly. "It's all right, my boy," Gaius said. "Sorry, what were you going to say?" Merlin asked. "This thing with Arthur has the potential to hurt you," is what I was going to say, Merlin. "And I want the two of you to figure things out so that doesn't happen," Gaius said. And Merlin came to the conclusion that Arthur had been right about him all along. Merlin had some sort of severe mental deficiency. Gaius was the last person who would disparage Merlin or the strand of destiny that tied Merlin and Arthur together, in whatever form it took. Merlin could only think to say thank you, and to not bother with wiping at his eyes. Gaius was right, of course. And maybe Merlin would do something about that this morning. Arthur awoke pleasantly, much to his chagrin, with Emmett beckoning him to rise and come to the breakfast table. It took a few sips of water and a couple sullen bites of an apple to notice Emmett behaving a little anxiously this morning. After a moment of watching the boy flit nervously about the room, Arthur asked, "Something the matter this morning?" Emmett froze and stared at him and bit his lip. "Well, sire, listen, please don't punish me for this. He threatened me," Emmett sputtered. "Who did?" I was told if I didn't, call you a spoiled arrogant prat, sire, and give you this note, then he'd ruin my life. I'm sorry, Emmett exclaimed, bowing profusely and handing Arthur a note in Merlin's messy scrawl. Arthur took it and glanced between Emmett, who was about to fall to pieces, and the folded note. Curiously, he flipped the message open and read. Arrogant brat. Dollop head. Insufferable prat. Arthur. Hope you savored your last peaceful morning. I don't plan on being sick again anytime soon. Warningly, Merlin. Tell him he'll be okay already, sire, came a blessedly familiar voice. He's gonna shake apart. Arthur looked to find Merlin still looking a little pale, but otherwise himself, leaning in the doorway. You're back? You're better? Arthur asked, failing to hide the note of glee in his voice. I am. Well, I had to be when I heard the kind of treatment Emmett was giving you. I couldn't let him continue, or he'd ruin all the good my years of substandard service have done you, Merlin said, grinning. It's true, replied Arthur, nodding. My standard of expectation almost started to rise. You can go, Emmett. Merlin can handle things from here. Arthur wondered if Emmett wouldn't need some sort of help after all of this, as he watched him scurry from the room. "Wound tight, that one," Merlin said casually. He pulled out a chair at the table and leaned forward on his elbows, and Arthur thought he looked like he needed to sit down for a moment. "Not completely better, then," Arthur said. Merlin shrugged. "Almost completely. Just easily tired out is all." "You don't have to be here today," Arthur said. "If you still need to rest, then you should." Saying it took some doing, because Arthur was more or less overjoyed to have Merlin back. Also, it would be nice not to have to impose upon his knights or evade his father. "I want to be here," Merlin said. The look in his dark blue eyes was unexpectedly serious of a sudden, and then Arthur felt a bit like he was being pulled into them. He'd have let himself be taken in, but for his fear of never being able to come out again, and he shook his head slightly as he straightened in his seat. "Good, because there's plenty for you to do," Arthur said. But the words lacked the bravado he'd meant to infuse them with, and Merlin, being his wonderful, infuriating self, knew it. "Merlin," Arthur said, at the exact same time as Merlin said, "Arthur." Arthur could feel himself smiling a little, and when Merlin tried to give him leave to talk first, Arthur shook his head. "You this time," he said. The knowing expression was on Merlin's face as he leaned forward in his chair, making their space closer and more intimate. The sunlight from the window spilled around him, and he gleamed in front of Arthur like some ethereal creature, breath-stealing and unrepentant. "I want to be here always," Merlin said, "because I love you. And because I love you, I will be here always, and I don't care what that means. I would prefer it if it meant that I could kiss you whenever I wanted, though." Arthur didn't know what he looked like now. Possibly like a fish on land for how hard it was for him to breathe properly. Maybe like a child for the fear in his stomach. But an air, he started, and Merlin shook his head once and swallowed Arthur with his eyes. "I don't care. We can cross that bridge when we come to it, or never cross it at all. We can circumvent the damn bridge or burn it down. I don't care. Arthur, I just want to be here with you. And I want to know what you want," Merlin said, the last word imploring like Arthur had never heard before. Maybe it was because Arthur was already steeped in the blue of Merlin's eyes, or because Merlin was in front of him looking lovely like crisp white sheets and not quite human like some part of Arthur knew he wasn't. But Arthur knew exactly what he wanted. They weren't even kissing, but Arthur knew emphatically what he wanted. So he leaned the rest of the way forward, and with his lips hovering just above Merlin's, he said, "I want you to stay here always, and to love you, and to kiss you whenever I want." And then they did kiss, and it was long and deep, and lasted the entire way to Arthur's bed. "Oh, my God, have a look!" exclaimed Sir Gareth. The knights raised their heads from readying the horses and saw Arthur crossing the field toward them with Merlin at his side. They were flushed-faced, talking animatedly, and walking at a decidedly slower pace than normal. "He's better," Sir Kay said warmly. "Oh, that's wonderful! Things can go back to normal." Sir Leon sent a squire to fetch Merlin's horse and tightened his saddle strap. "I'd say they'll be better than normal," he said, grinning secretively. The knights all agreed, because they'd fought alongside Arthur for years, and they knew when their leader was blissfully happy. Sir Leon handed Arthur and Merlin the reins to their respective horses when they arrived, and there was a few moments of all-around joviality as the knights welcomed Merlin back with manly pats on the back, which Merlin took in stride for all his still somewhat waif-like appearance. "I brought honey cakes for lunch. Can you eat them?" Sir Kay asked Merlin as they climbed into saddle. "Yeah, of course," Merlin said brightly. "Especially if they're the ones your mum makes. Those are amazing. Speaking of, she should really send some down to poor Mrs. Wilson. I heard they held a funeral for Bleeding Bill and Goaty Gertie. That was nice. But cakes might cheer her up a bit, though." Sir Leon thought Merlin looked appropriately confused when every knight in the patrol promptly galloped away with Arthur chasing after them. And after the obligatory cuffs were given, and jibes traded, and Merlin stopped fruitlessly asking what the hell that had all been about, they reassembled. They formed the patrol lines like they were meant to be formed, with Sir Gareth trailing the end without a partner, Sir Tristan by Sir Lamorack's horse, ever unwieldy, and with Merlin and Arthur leading side by side. End.